Welcome to Top Talent, the fascinating podcast about incredible talent residing or coming to Albany, New York's capital region, with your host, former radio personality and resident rhymer, Richie Phillips. And now, without further blabbing from me, your virtual announcer, who really doesn't exist in the flesh, as if you couldn't guess, here's Richie.
So you may or may not be able to tell that I'm outside walking right now. I'm decompressing, basically. I just finished a podcast with someone who meant a lot to me for a very, I think, interesting reason. It's kind of like a full circle moment for me because I came to the Albany area in 1980, ended up on this gentleman's radio show in 1984. He was and still is, I consider, a master interviewer and a legend in the Albany area. And I thought it would be kind of interesting on my podcast if I could flip this and interview him. And I got a chance to do it and was very actually nervous about it, to the point where I actually had to come outside and decompress. So that's what I'm doing. So this is being recorded at the end of the podcast, but I'm putting this at the beginning because this is going to be my introduction. I'm Richie Phillips, by the way. My podcast is called Top Talent. And I'm about to interview a top talent, a legend, a broadcaster, podcaster, author, and so on and so on and so on. I'm going to let him tell the story as we make our way through the podcast. He is Bob Cudmore. Without further ado, this is my interview on Top Talent. Well, I'm here with the legend, and not just in his own mind, in the minds of everyone that I know and everyone in this area and everyone outside this area, Bob Cudmore. Hello, Bob.
Well, hello, Richie. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing all right for an older man.
Let me ask you a question. I think, you know, trying to analyze the way I'm interviewing you, that was kind of a very lackluster way of introducing you. As an interviewer, I'm interested. Do you give the biography of the person before introducing the person, or do you just kind of do a short thing?
Yes. Well, I'm doing a podcast myself right now,
right,
about history. And so, for example, I just prepared for the next podcast, which is going to be with this big shot author, in a sense, who's been making the rounds of political talk shows anyway. Her name's Julia Swieg. And she, well, anyhow, so I have a short paragraph about her.
Right.
But what we've started to do is to start the podcast, and I'll ask Julia Swieg to do it tomorrow. She may or may not do it, and we may or may not like it. But I said, well, what we usually like to do is ask the guest to, you know, say your name and then say a little bit about what you're here to talk about, you know, your, in her case, her book. And sometimes that gets us very interesting results. And we, I would say, often use it at the start of the podcast. Then I come in with the author introduction and then the first question.
Interesting. Now, it's interesting you say that, because I've heard podcasts and I've heard, you know, TV talk shows where they'll go on for so long, the person who they're interviewing doesn't even have a chance to say anything.
Yeah, that's a kind of a peeve of mine.
Yeah.
I mean, I do it. I mean, I've done it over the years, and sometimes, in fact, with Julia Swieg's intro, I just cut it down by like three or four lines, because I'll often listen to other podcasts. Like, I just finished listening to her on Fresh Air,
mm-hmm,
on NPR.
I like that podcast,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, so I noticed they didn't say a lot about her past. You know, it's not why you're there. I want to get right to it.
Right, exactly. So I'm thinking, do I say, here's Bob Cudmore? No, that's you know, not enough. Do I blab on? That's too much. So I'm going to have to do it my way. I have to rhyme it. So I hope you can hear this, Bob.
Oh, really? That's great.
Yeah, here we go. Here's my intro.
Here we go.
He's Bob Cudmore, than a broadcaster could hope to be. Also well-versed in local history.
Say that again.
Cool.
You think he'd retire, but
no.
He's just not that guy.
Not that guy.
Life doesn't end after you ditch GY. He's back in the town where he was born.
That's true.
An Amsterdamian at his core.
Is that a word?
I don't think so.
There's no one quite like Bob Cudmore. More.
Well, I love it, Richie. You know, I was telling somebody this the other day, or actually Joe Gallagher and I were talking. I used to talk about this when I was at WGY. I have a name that's hard to grasp, and it sounds a little funny. Your name's Cudmore, you know, because of course the first thing that comes to mind are cows, you know, and they're and people would frequently send misspellings of my name. And when I was at WGY, we used to get a lot of mail, and the one that was always my favorite was from a critic of mine. Didn't like what I did, and he wrote, "Bob could do more."
I love it. Yeah, that's a criticism right there, right? You don't have to write much more.
There you go.
So I guess my interview style here is, oh, here's another question for you. When you actually do an interview, do you write out questions? I'm just interested. Do you write them out like verbatim,
I
or do you bullet point?
I do. In fact,
really?
With this person I just did, and I may or may not follow it,
mm-hmm.
Once we get going, because I just said and we have found, Dave and I, and it's mainly been up to Dave, that Dave has taken to editing our podcasts, not so much to take out the content, but to take out, because that happens all the time, and I don't know if you're going to do that, but
yeah, but that's a traditional thing with, you know, broadcasters from years ago. You'd never, you know, an or an ah was terrible. You watch, like, I don't want to mention names, but people on CNN, they're umming and ahing constantly.
Right. Well, it seems to be quite common these days.
Oh, yeah.
Well, again, to play the ancient broadcaster card, do you remember Howard Tupper?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
He was the TV weatherman.
Sure.
When I knew him, when I was at WGY, he was doing the bowling show, which he used to record on Friday nights, and I work nights. And he would, and I also did a once a month big band show on Contact, which was on at night. And I remember him telling me, or telling the world, I was probably interviewing him, that he said he was told by the first announcer of WTY, who was Colin Hager, he said to him, "Son, when you don't know what to say, don't say anything. It's better just to sit there and let the seconds tick away than to go,
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I can remember people saying stuff like that to us as well. So we're going to go right back to the beginning here. So here's my first bullet point. I just have the word Amsterdam. What does that town mean to you? I mean, were you born and raised there?
Yes, I was born and raised in Amsterdam, New York. And the real confusion is I write about Amsterdam, New York to this day in the Daily Gazette. I do a weekly column called Focus on History, which mainly tells history stories from Amsterdam. But honestly, at the moment, I do not live there.
Well, you didn't have to divulge that.
Well, no, because the people in Amsterdam know that. And they'll sometimes say, "Well, why don't you live here?" So, I live in Scotia, or actually Glenville. It's where we moved when I came back to the area to work at WGY. And I'm about 25 minutes from Amsterdam, not a very distant commute. And I used to go up there all the time, especially when my folks were alive and my one aunt that I kind of took care of. And then I did a 10-year stint doing a radio show there in my quasi-retirement.
That was my next bullet point.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
I started there in 2004, and I ended it myself in 2014. I wanted to, you know, get away from being fired.
Get a one-up on them, huh?
Yeah.
But
the thing was, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say the problem I was having, and some people thought it was stupid, but it was the truth, that the radio station, it's WVTL, mm-hmm. which stood for the Valley's Talk Leader, and it was located at its transmitter site, high on the hill, as they used to say, in the town of Florida on Route 30, which is a real tough stretch of highway in the wintertime. And I was just knew that I'd had it with winters and getting in there to do the 6 a.m. morning show, and that my driving wasn't what it used to be as I was getting older. So I just gave it up.
Now, was this show... I know I'm kind of out of order on my bullet points here, so this is really frustrating me. No, it is not. Not
okay,
really.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. No, was that a Coffee with Cudmore? Is that what you called the show?
Yeah, it was called Coffee with Cudmore. I don't know if you ever ran across Tom Rigotti. He left WVTL and worked at WGY for a while. I think he's with Fox Radio News now. But he really, I have to credit him with coming up with the name.
Love it.
Coffee with Cudmore. And we even had a promotional product, Richard. You probably had hundreds of those in your distinguished career. But I think it might have been the only time I ever had something with my name on it. But unfortunately, I don't have any of them left, so I can't give you one, or I don't even have one.
So you're talking coffee cups?
Yes. That's right.
Coffee cups. Some of the promotional items we had our ugly faces on them. You know, that was
more
embarrassing.
True of this one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this had. But when I was hired, the station to this day is owned by a family from Utica, the Rozier family.
Hmm.
Ken Rozier, Grant Rozier, Roxanne Rozier. There are a lot of Roziers.
A lot of Roziers.
And their main business is in Utica. They have Utica radio stations. And I remember when I first was hired to do the morning show in Amsterdam, I went up there, and I looked good then, Richie. I mean, it was 2004. I hadn't really entered kind of the senior citizen category so much. And they took wonderful pictures of me. I thought they were wonderful.
But don't you miss the days of that kind of radio, you know, like the family? Well, you say there's still family-owned radio stations, but not many, I'll tell you.
Yeah. No, there aren't many. And I get to give the Rogers a lot of credit because they've been there for some time. The original Rozier, I guess, Ken, he was in television sales up in Utica and then bought his first station. And he's bought and sold, you know, different stations.
Right.
The customary chains have come in and own most of the radio properties up there, but he owns... I don't know, four or five stations probably.
But starting out, in fact, let's rewind even further. You did radio in high school, right?
Yes, at WCSS, doing radio now with the podcast.
It's the same one. I get you now. I didn't make that
connection. It's not the one that I was at from 2004 to 2014. That was WCSS's competition, if you will.
Okay.
But WCSS was the original... Amsterdam local radio station, started in 1947 or 48, and I worked there starting in 1962 when I was a junior in high school.
And I read something, and I guess I'm kind of stealing somebody's article that they did on you that I saw on online. This kind of hit me. Now, you were just starting, and 62 is very close to 63, which is very close to November 22nd, 1963. Were you on the air when John F. Kennedy was assassinated? And how did you handle that?
I was in an elevator.
Oh, I thought that you were on the air. It said you were on the air.
No. Well, the deal was, by then, 1963, November 22nd, I was at Boston University.
Oh.
I wasn't at the radio station in Amsterdam, but there's radio to it. In fact, it was in the elevator going up to one of my friends who... was another radio geek. I was studying English literature, but you know, I knew that I really wanted to stay in radio. And so I was going to see my friend Jim Holzer. And so ultimately we connected. We went over to BU's radio stations. They had and have two. They have a campus station where Howard Stern started, mm-hmm. or was early on WTBU, and they've got this FM station, WBUR, which today is big. I mean, it's one of the key, it's the place that originated Car Talk for NPR. And they do a lot of shows. And, well, anyway, so, but at the time, you couldn't, I mean, nobody listened to FM in 1963.
Sure.
But it was on the air, still as, you know, powerful a station, I think, as it is today. And we started doing coverage of the assassination, and we were in Boston, you know, the home of JFK. And so I remember going around town doing a person on the street interviews. I went with a reporter named Tom, or a BU student who became a reporter named Tom McNiff, who worked for UPI. I remember we weren't wearing ties, so they wouldn't let us into the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. And we did coverage, and not that long ago, because the way things evolve, my sweetie's nephew by marriage, I guess you'd say, Jamie Bologna, is one of the stars, if you will, of WBUR today. He does a show called Radio Boston, or he's one of the people on Radio Boston. So when one of the anniversaries of JFK's assassination came up, he brought me in. Not, he didn't bring me to the station, but we did it from a phone, or, you know, phone interview or whatever, talking about those days at WBUR.
Must have been a thrill. But it said also here that you saved a type script from that show.
Yes, and that was one of the things that Jamie Bologna was very interested in seeing, and they had a picture of it. Yeah, it was because we would type stories. You probably remember that too. You know, it wasn't anything on a computer. We typed it.
Although what you did, you know, when you went to GY, being a news station, I was on a more of a music station. So if there was anything that ever happened like that, we would cover it, but only a couple of minutes, and then go back to the. We were kind of the escapist station in a way.
Yeah, and, well, no, that was, and in some ways I liked that better. You know, I liked the idea of being a DJ. I mean, I was a DJ when I started out.
Oh, you were? But, so you did music. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what I did at WCSS. And since I was in high school, it became popular with fellow students at Amsterdam High School. And that was a great boon because, well, you know, you always think you're not very popular when you're in high school, but it gave, in fact, I'll sometimes look at my high school yearbook and a lot of people mention, oh, I called it the BC show.
BC, I love it. But going back to that, to go from a music oriented station where you have a certain style, which is very short and to the point. And if you talk too long, everybody gets mad at you because the music is king.
Right.
To going to WGY, right. That must have been an amazing transformation. I mean, I try to picture that, not having the music and having to fill for maybe, you know, 15
well, it
minutes.
Is. It can be challenging.
Oh, yeah.
But I was sort of leading up to that. I mean, even when I was in Boston at WBUR, we did the Kennedy assassination. But I ended up doing a show called Newspaper of the Air on WBUR in Boston, which was an hour-long news show that ran at night. And I used to have to fill that hour.
So that was your training?
If they were paying me $35 a week.
That's big.
That hour. And so then when I moved on to, basically I worked in the Boston area, a couple of stations. Then I moved on to Pittsfield, Mass., where my wife, was still alive, and our children were born in Pittsfield. And we were there from 1968, the end of it, to 1980, when I got the job at WGY.
But how did that happen? You saw an opening at GY and interviewed for
heard about it on the news because my predecessor, a man named Bill Miller, had been let go, as I would be let go some 13 years later.
Oh, jeez.
So I remember we moved into this neighborhood in Glenville, where at the time one of our college friends from actually the radio TV school was living just up the street, and his wife saw it on TV. He said, you should apply. I said, well, and I had applied. I'd applied for other openings at WGY, but never got there. I really wanted to do the morning show.
You did. Everybody does. I was going to say, yeah, because that's a night show. Yeah. Oh, so you enjoyed mornings the most, huh?
Yes. I mean, yes. but I didn't do it. Once in a while, I'd fill in for Don Weeks. But right. I ended up doing the night show. And I grew to love it. I mean, I did it for 13 years, and it changes your life. You know, you go from getting up at 2 or 3 or whatever in the morning. When did you get up at that time?
I was never awake on the morning show. I just want to let you know. But I, my eyes opened at about 4, and we were on at 5:30, and it was 5:30 to 9, and then they changed it to 5:30 to 10. But yeah, I was up usually 4 in the morning, unless it was bad weather. Yeah.
But then when I worked nights, I worked basically second shift, you know, 3 to 11, 4 to midnight, something like that. The show itself being on, it moved around a little bit. When I started there, we did 8 to midnight. Mm-hmm. Then we did 7 to 11. That's what we did most of the time, 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. But then toward the end, we did 6. I think I was ended doing 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. You know, they cut down the amount of hours that I had. And it wasn't that they syndicated after that. It was when Steve Fitz came back to WGY.
Yeah.
I think he did 9 to midnight.
But for people who are listening to this from out of the area, I don't think they understand how huge your show was. And maybe you were thinking in the beginning, boy, I'd rather do mornings because mornings is, you know, the people in mornings lead the radio station. That was always the philosophy, you know. To be a nights is probably like a second choice for you. But no, back then especially, your show was, heard all over the East Coast, right? I mean, that must have been a little frustrating.
Yes, well, thank you. Well, they had this, well, the technical term is had the skip. You know, might get a call from West Virginia or Cape Cod or Florida or something like that.
I was going to ask that. What was do you remember the call that you got from the farthest from Albany?
Well, I just remember some of the regulars, and there was a guy from Wheeling, West Virginia, I want to say who called.
On AM.
And then there was the communist from Ohio. How could I forget him?
The communist. You know,
he was somewhere in Ohio, and he didn't want to be unserious. You know, he was calling to tout the party line,
right.
But I was more interested in where he was living. You know? Where are you? You out in Ohio? Well, it doesn't matter. Your country is the evil empire or whatever. So. But
how about Canada? Didn't you get calls from Canada as well?
Not as many.
No.
Not as many for some reason. We skipped to certain places. Again,
right.
Ohio and down in, Wheeling, West Virginia was one. Also out to Cape Cod. Not so much all of Massachusetts, but you could pick us up on Cape Cod sometimes, and sometimes Florida. I mean, that was a multiple skip.
Yeah.
And it also, you know, we had a big audience. Unfortunately, I will be for a change. I mean, the years that I was there, it had started maybe a little bit before I went there, but that was when our nighttime audience was starting to shrink.
So you're talking about, what year was it, like 1984?
I started in 1980.
1980, and it was starting to slip
then. And
then
I left there in 1993. Huh. And when I left, I was the last host of a live show at WGY, I think, after 6 o'clock or after 8 o'clock or whenever you want to say. In other words, that was what was put on, you know, they started using syndicated programming. Which,
right.
They didn't really, I mean, yeah, they had to pay for it, but not, they didn't. I mean, the most of the syndicated shows, unlike the really big ones like Rush or Howard Stern or Sean Hannity, most of the shows you carried on a barter basis, I believe is what they say.
Barter for spots.
And you had to run their spots, but they didn't have to pay me, you know?
Oh, right.
And that's a... You know, it was a considerable expense. I mean, we all made good money at WGY.
Yeah.
I mean, some of my former union colleagues will probably be mad to hear me say that, but we did. And I think it was in large part because we were unionized.
That's right.
And secondly, because we, at least when I started, I still worked for General Electric.
GE, that's right.
Yeah, in fact, I was just thinking of that when Ernie Tatro died recently,
yes.
TV anchor.
Yeah.
And the thing about working for GE Broadcasting, and I only really worked for them something like 2.5 years, but and then they sold the stations. But it was just different from other radio stations because it was, I don't know, just more stable, more secure. Not that they didn't fire people, they did.
And it wasn't in a trailer. It wasn't in a trailer. It was in a nice building.
Right. Yeah, it was a beautiful building. I remember that the bunker was sort of like...
Yes. Yes, the bunker.
Yes, it was nice.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought this up because I have a very distinct memory of that studio. It was one of the biggest thrills of my life, and I don't know if you remember this. You have had thousands of people on the air
you
and so forth.
You came to do my show, right?
I came to do your show. It was in 1984, so let's do that math. That's 30,
wow.
What, almost 40 years ago, correct? 30, yeah?
It was a long time ago.
Yes, and I'll tell you exactly what it was about. Curtis Sliwa had come to the Capital Region.
Remember the Guardian Angel. Do you have that song?
The Guardian Angels. He wanted to, for folks from out of the area, he wanted to set up a chapter here in Albany because of the crime. And it was the local police were up in arms, kind of saying, we don't need you here, basically.
Yep,
correct? You remember that whole thing, right?
Yeah, I remember that. And I remember having you on about that.
Well,
And your song, do you have the song? I don't know.
Bob, not only do I have the song, I have the interview. I'm just
going to
play a clip of it because I saved. Did you save a lot of stuff when you were on the air? Did you save a lot of tapes?
No, unfortunately. In fact, a gentleman we both know, Mike Patrick, who's the news anchor at WGY, was just asking me for, what I can help with their... I mean, I'll do whatever I can,
right.
But I don't have as much stuff as you would think. The station, WGY, will have its 100th anniversary next year.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
So
going back to this this little event, I walked into your studio. I can remember it like yesterday, and way before I was ever on the air myself, obviously. I was playing in a piano bar. And
you were a school teacher, weren't you?
I was a school teacher. Again, I don't want to make this interview about me, but I'm just I'm only bringing this up because I have the tape. This is you interviewing me, and then I'm going to play a little bit of the song live here. But I changed the melody a bit because you know this copyright problem when you do a podcast. I can't play. Parodies.
Yes, it was a parody song.
It was
right?
A parody, so I'm going to kind of disguise it a little bit. But this is 1984 with Bob Cudmore and yours truly on WGY.
And at the start of the hour, we played this tune, and I wanted to get Curtis Sliwa's reaction to it. It's done by a local entertainer. He's a writer of topical parodies, if you will. He performs at the 21 Club, Elk Street in Albany. His name is Richie Phillips, and he took the tune of and made a song about the Guardian Angels. So, Curtis Sliwa and everyone, here it is.
Okay, so this was it.
And at the start of the hour, we played...
Got to stop that. Okay, so here we go. Can you hear this, Bob?
Yes.
Okay, good. I'm disguising it a bit. It kind of went like this. I'm just abridging it a bit. Guardian angel, I've been praying that I'd meet you here on Earth one day. But I never pictured you in a T-shirt and a red beret. Sliwa, 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 Guardian Angel. This is the ending. Next time you're up here and you think our policemen need your help, why not take a civil service test like everyone else? Now, what thrilled me about this is that you had him on the air to respond to it. It was the biggest thrill, and this is a little bit of his response.
Richie Phillips,
okay.
What do you think, Curtis Sliwa?
Well, I think we need to sign Richie up as our theme master across the country.
He just really took it really well. He was very, very nice about it.
Yeah.
That I still is etched in my memory. You don't know what that meant to me to be on that station with you. I'm telling you.
No, that's great. Well, I do remember this. I always thought that I could take the credit along with Bob Mason of Tix 106 with discovering Richie.
Yes, I have to give credit to him as well. He put me on many, many times. Yeah. Yep.
Well, it didn't. I think by then Don Weeks was doing the morning show at WGY. I think he had you on too.
Yes, he did, and I'll never forget that as well. You folks meant so much to me in the beginning, and continue to. You were the pioneers for me. You know, when I moved up here in 1980, and I used to listen to the radio, and I'd say, "Oh wow, to be on a radio station! Oh,
really?
Oh,
So you came in 1980." Keep asking you a question. Where did you come from?
It's nice to be on your show, Bob. No.
Where did he come from?
Yeah, I'm from Long Island originally.
From Long Island, okay.
But I went to college up here in Oneonta. And then when I graduated with a teaching degree, I got a job teaching back in my own school on Eastern Long Island again. So I went back there, and then I stayed there for a few years and then moved up here. So that's how that happened. Yeah. And then I couldn't find a teaching job, so I found a piano bar job in this great place called the 21 Club, which was in downtown Albany, right across from the Capitol, so all the politicians used to come in there.
I think my wife Mary and I went there one night.
Really?
To hear you.
Oh, that was.
Or maybe you weren't there. That was when we messed it up.
That was the night you enjoyed it, because I wasn't there.
We went there, and where's he's on next night, tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was an amazing place. Oh, we had Mario Cuomo come in there. We've had, I just remember so many people. Who was the biggest star you ever interviewed out of all the years there?
Kurt Douglas.
Oh, yeah. Who's...
He's from Amsterdam.
He's from Amsterdam. That's right. Next door neighbor, probably, right?
Well, no, but he was. He lived about three doors from where my grandfather lived.
Hmm.
So, but I only interviewed him once or twice, and did a big production on WGY when they had Kirk Douglas Day in Amsterdam when he came back. It was sometime around 80 something. I'm not sure when they. You know, he came to Amsterdam and they gave him the keys to the city or whatever they did. But and he went on a kind of a tour of the city. Oh, I know what they did. They dedicated a park to him, which is still there. It's next to the police station.
But you're being a little modest, because wasn't there a Bob Cudmore Day?
There was. In fact, Don Weeks, bless his soul,
yes,
used to make me part of his show sometimes. And when after they had Kirk Douglas Day, he said, "Well, why don't they do something for Bob?"
Oh,
so
nice.
We had Bob Cudmore Day.
Oh, that's
up
a thrill.
In the Hampshire.
Well, it shows what you mean to the area. And Don Weeks, the late great. Oh, another legend, another incredible legend.
A legend. Yes, he was. In fact, I'm looking at a picture, which I have on my bulletin board, from one of our, the WGY remote broadcasts from Fonda Fultonville High School. And we're sitting on the stage. And the reason we were there is that Fonda Fultonville had raised maybe the most money for Christmas Wish, which was WGY's big charity. And in the picture, the left to right, it's Don Weeks, me, and I'm quite thin then. In fact, I look pretty good then. And then Harry Downey, and then almost crowded out of the picture, you can just see part of him, is Joe Gallagher.
And Harry Downey with the What's Cooking show. These are classic.
Yeah, with the What's Cooking.
Sure.
That's it.
Well, again, we're jumping around on my list, but I don't care. And I'm sure, did that ever frustrate you in the beginning, where you'd have all the questions in order and then you have to do them out of order?
No, no.
No.
But if I, now as I get older, I might forget.
Yes.
And ask what the person just said. I mean, that's a classic Bob and Ray routine called the Komodo Dragon. I don't know if you've ever heard that. But
since I'm the only one that knows that this is out of order, why am I getting upset, right?
So, it's no big deal.
As we're talking about, so you went from radio and now you're in podcasting. I'm going to ask you questions about today's technology and so forth. Did you ever... Number one, think that podcasting, a word that you never even heard of 5 years ago, would be so big. In fact, I just read today there are now 2 million podcasts out there.
Yeah, I didn't. In fact, the podcast I do, I started when I was doing the radio show in Amsterdam in 2014.
Wow.
I started doing an hour of the show that I was doing called it The Historians. So we started doing history topics, and that's all it's meant to me. I don't know the ins and outs of, you know, how you producing them the way the big guys produce them, or the, maybe the way you produce them with a lot of music and so on. Our show, we think, sounds good. And Dave, you know, rides herd on the audio and tries to make all the speakers sound logical. But we don't, you know, have a heavy production thing, if you will.
Yeah, there's a lot of work involved in it. And going back to Rado, did you ever think like a person? Did you ever think Rush Limbaugh would have made it doing talk on middays? All these things that developed while you were on the air, all these changes, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, they did. Well, I don't. Yes, I thought a lot about Rush Limbaugh. I would think you knew he was big when he first came on, and that he had a big audience. You know, it's something like Donald Trump of today.
I mean, right.
People might criticize Donald Trump, including me, but you know, he, with the exception of Joe Biden, he got more votes, I think, in that last election than anybody got for president.
Mm-hmm.
So it's popular, and Rush was a trend in broadcasting, a conservative talk show host, and that was part of the reason that I lost my job, because I was seen as either a wishy-washy talk show host, in the, you know, in terms of politics, or
right.
a liberal, you know,
middle
left-leaning Democrat, you know, as opposed to Rush. And Rush coming on and being able to charge money for the show, you know, probably hastened my departure as well, because they didn't, again, have the station didn't have the money to pay for a nighttime person, because they were putting a lot of the money into Rush Limbaugh.
But just the strategy of putting on a talk show in middays and you doing a talk show at night, did you shake your head initially and go, that's not going to work?
Well,
I'm sure a lot of programmers said the same thing, like, that can't work.
Yeah, well, no, because at WGY, we were doing a talk show at midday.
Oh, that's true.
It was, I don't know if you remember her, but it was Ellie Pankin.
Oh, yeah, she was midday. That's right. I kept thinking she was at night, too.
Dialogue 81, and she did really well. And
unfortunately,
Ellie passed away while I was still there at WGY and had to stop doing her show at some point. But she was on 12:30 to 2. And then we had a very interesting show to one of the gentlemen who comes to this radio person's lunch that Richie and I go to, and that's Walt Fritz.
Sure.
Walt used to be on from 2 to 3,
okay.
And it wasn't a talk show, but it was called The Music Magazine. And he would have interviews with performers and so forth, and plus their music. So WGY, I guess that's all I'm saying, is they did talk in the middle of the day and found that it seemed to work.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned another guy, Howard Stern. Did you ever think a person in radio could eventually make $500 million on a contract? And he's not
even on
radio anymore. I mean, not terrestrial radio.
And he followed kind of the same path I did in terms of college. I mean,
right.
He went to Boston University, as did Bill O'Reilly. But yeah, I mean, Howard Stern is a tremendous entertainer. I wasn't, you know, the biggest fan of Howard Stern, but I had to admit, I mean, he was really funny, or he could be excruciatingly funny.
Mm-hmm. Engaging, incredibly engaging.
Yeah.
In fact, I was reading his book. Very interesting. Something really hit me of his strategy. He's no fool, obviously. He's brilliant to get as far as he got. But he would wait, you know, like there was, he knew how radio worked in terms of the way the hour was structured. Like at 10 after,
right.
He knew that there might be a new audience, you know. And so he would say something, the most outrageous thing at 9 after, and just make up anything, no matter what it was, dirty, whatever,
right.
just to get people to hang on for that next quarter hour is what they call on radio. Yep. I mean, he really knew what he was doing.
I never understood a lot of that stuff.
Right.
I hope you did.
Yeah, no, it's very scientific. For people who don't know, radio is studied, maybe overstudied, but studied down to the minute, you know? Incredible.
Yeah.
And another thing, another big change, did you ever think that computers would be playing the music now versus, you know, records? And then it went to these things called carts that, you know, people, they look like 8-tracks, basically, and then CDs, and now it's a computer.
No, it is. In fact, that was a revelation to me when I went back into radio, because I, you know, left, or it left me in 93, and I did some maybe fill in here and there in the next number of years, but I basically worked in public relations for the state. But then in 2004, going back to good old Amsterdam, I mean, everything is on computer.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, I had to get used to it, but I have to say, I will say this. I think, for example, the audio programs like Adobe are much easier to use than the old splicing tape.
Oh, yeah. So forth. Definitely. And you don't, you know, cut your fingers.
Right. You cut your finger and maybe cut the interview off, you know.
That's right. I can remember you'd go into what they call the production room, right, to do commercials.
Yep.
And I can remember, you know, you would record the commercial onto a, for folks not in radio, onto a thing that looked like an 8-track. And then you would physically carry the thing over into the on-air studio, and you put it in the machine and it would play. And I remember our boss saying, you know, one of these days, it's coming very soon, you're going to be able to record that thing right in that room, and it's going to automatically be on the computer in the studio, and you don't do anything. I said, that can't happen.
Yeah, he's full of that.
Amazing. Just amazing how things have changed. Wow. Boy, we've covered a lot. We've covered a lot. Now, you also did a newspaper. You were a newspaper reporter. Well, not a reporter, but columnist, right? You did 700 columns.
What's that?
You did 700?
Yeah, 500, more than that, because I've been doing that since maybe about the year 2000. I did that before I went back into radio. So I do a column a week for the Daily Gazette, and whether I need to, you know, you got to come up with something every week. But I started when I was let go at WGY. Rex Smith, I don't know if you've run across him in your media career.
Yes.
But Rex was, well, anyway, he was, at the time, was editor of the Troy Record.
Mm-hmm.
And he hired me, and I hung out, you know, I hung on to that job for a while to be a columnist for the Record, you know, a general columnist, you know, like Fred LeBrun of that day, or Sarah Foss today, or Chris Churchill. So I did a Monday and Friday column for the Record, I want to say for about a year. And by then, Rex had gone on to the Times Union, and first they cut it back, and then they cut it out. But that was my first introduction to newspapers and deadlines and things like that. And after I did this documentary about Amsterdam history in the year 2000 with WMHT, my co-producer was the great documentary producer, Steve Dunn, I pitched the Gazette. I said, you know, now I've got all these stories about Amsterdam. I could put them in the paper. And they said, huh, how about that? So they did. I think it was a man named Woodman was the editor at the time. And they just kept going with it. And also on my bulletin board, my mentor at the Gazette, who's also passed away, came on board shortly thereafter. As my editor, and his name's Irv Dean, and he really helped me a lot with style and so on and so forth. And weren't for Irv Dean, I don't think I'd still be at that paper.
But you were an English major, so that kind of helped you, right? I mean, as far as writing was concerned.
Yeah, I like to write,
yeah.
But I guess the best thing Irv, well, one of the best things Irv taught me, and I don't usually bring this up, is my column, at some point he said, Bob, we're going to move your column from Sunday. It was running Sunday. which, you know, in newspaper terms is the biggest circulation.
Yeah.
We're going to run it Saturday. But he said, we're going to run it every week.
Wow,
and
that's good.
You've been writing, like maybe it was 900 words. He said, I want you to write 600 words. I said, oh, you know, some weeks I'll do 610 or 6. No, I want 600 words. And every column I've written since has been 600 words. Doesn't go out the door until it's 600 words.
Have you gotten to the point where you'll finish it and you'll look down and you'll say, wow, it's almost exactly. In other words, in your mind, you have a 600-word column.
Yeah.
Kind of pre-edited.
Well, also, you see it on the computer. So
right.
But the advantage of that, I mean, one thing I learned about newspapers is it makes the column easy for them to use because it doesn't have to jump. Newspaper stories, newspaper columns often jump. Let me be from page one to page six.
Right.
But my column, you can fit in the top. You can fit. It'll just fit on one side. It'll fit on the bottom. It fits. So the old saying, all the news that fits, we print, you know. So
that's true, because today nobody wants to fidget probably with multiple pages. They're not even used to reading a newspaper as much anymore.
True.
Right? So
well,
you want to make it easy.
Yeah, I mean, newspapers still jump.
Yeah.
But columns like mine, and by like mine, I mean ones they get usually from out of their own shop,
right,
you know, that aren't really written under strict deadline pressure, like somebody started working on it the night before, like, I don't know, gardening or the think columns that come out of Washington. Well, they usually are. They're just going to be in one place.
Sure, sure. So let me get this straight. For a person who, because they say it to me as well, aren't you retired now? You're not, you know, you're still doing things. Let me get this straight. You're still doing your podcast. That's once a week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you still writing these columns then?
Yes, I still write a column once a week.
So it's a column?
So I write a column and I write, do a podcast.
Right.
I mean, Dave's the actual producer, but I'm the voice of the podcast. And then I do some talks, although that's been, of course, different with the COVID. I mean, I've learned how to do virtual talks.
Right.
And I've written books. I have three books about Amsterdam history, which, you know, sold for a while. They still exist. So if somebody wants to buy them, they can. They're on Amazon.
Oh, well, I'll put the link up. We'll sell you some books, hopefully.
That a way.
That's great.
Like to do that.
Did you like the schedule of, I guess, writing a book? I mean, how long did it take you to write the typical book?
Well, probably not as long as you might think, because the books I write are based on the newspaper columns. Okay, I mean, or they are the newspaper columns.
Oh, okay.
Or to some extent, although I change them, move them around, and so on and so forth, and different word limits and so on and so forth when you're writing.
So it's a compilation of your columns.
Yeah. Yeah,
oh,
and the main thing that I did in the books is add pictures to my story. Because with the Gazette column, rarely they'll run a picture, but usually they do not.
Right.
But most of these local history columns have some kind of visual you can use,
mm-hmm.
you know, an old picture or whatever.
Sure. So as we wrap this up, if you were talking to a high school student and the high school student walked up to you and said, I really want to be in radio like Bob Cudmore, what would you say? What advice would you give to somebody? Would you say to them now, I wouldn't even try. You will never get on the air. Or would you say what would you say?
Well, I'd say go for it. I mean, do what you want to do. To some extent, this is living out in our family with, I mentioned, Jamie Bologna. I mean, he had made that decision long before he met me. But remember, there he was at DU. He was going to go into radio, and he's in radio. It's a hard business, but it's always been that way. And it may not. Maybe he'll have to follow more of the path of Howard Stern, trying to become the king of all media. I mean, you can't just do radio anymore. You got to do other things.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I remember being on the air and they'd said, okay, you guys have to do a blog too. And I'd say, great, what's a blog? I didn't even know what a blog was. Never read one. And we ended up writing, you know, multiple ones a week. Yeah, you have to do a lot more than being behind the microphone. Yeah.
Yeah, but you with that music, that was something. I remember, again, up in Amsterdam. It was actually in Florida. Maybe you remember the little diner that was near the radio station I worked at that covered Amsterdam. And you had done a song for them.
Yes.
They were just so pleased, and that must have been great. You were like Santa Claus coming to town.
Oh, I love doing that. I absolutely love just – that's the beauty of radio, is the beauty of local radio, is talking to people and having them call in. And I just had such a blast. They would give me ideas for songs, and I'd write songs about, you know, their towns and that type of thing, and go to schools and stuff like that. And one more thought about podcasting as I really think about it. To me, podcasting proves that radio still has a big function in people's lives, because it really is radio. It's just democratized radio where anybody can sit in their garage and do their own little radio show. But it shows that it still has life.
Yes, and people will choose what they listen to.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's right. It's a very It's a sliver of culture. You know, you can listen to an automobile podcast. You can listen to anything. Oh my God, there's so many of them. I love them.
Right.
Yep. I really enjoyed this, and I hope you did too. And
well,
I hope
me too, Rich.
I hope I passed the audition as an
interviewer. Let me ask Curtis Lee. I hope he's still with us. Is he? I don't know.
Oh, he's still around. He's definitely still
around. Is he? Well,
oh, sure. Well, good luck on your podcast. And once again, the podcast is called The Historians, right?
That is correct.
And it's available.
You can find it on SoundCloud and bobcudmore.com.
Okay. And for the folks that do follow podcasts, there's always these little show notes at the bottom. And I'll put it in the show notes for you folks if you want to listen to Bob. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Very good.
And buy his books, too.
Buy my books. Read the column.
Read the column.
And I could speak to your group.
And you
once we're speaking to groups again.
And if you need a piano player to play in the background, let me know, because I got to get out of this house.
Yes.
All right, Bob. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Check out the website at hireRichie.com. He is on Facebook at Ricky Phillips and Twitter at Ryman Richie. Thanks for listening, and please subscribe and leave a comment. He reads them in bed. It makes him very happy.
And here's one more thing that would make me happy. I do a live piano bar on Facebook. I call it Facebook Live Piano Bar. And if you join my Facebook group, which is Facebook Live Piano Barflies, it will inform you when the next one's going to be. So just go to FB Live Piano Barflies and sign up for it. The actual piano bar is on my Facebook page, which is at Richie Phillips, RichiePhillips. Would love to have you along. And that's about it. Hope to see you again on
Top Talent.